interviews with. It's amazing how unassuming he is about all this stuff. I look back at my life and I almost feel like I was surfing the shock waves of the impact of the life that Gerd
and Bob
and Carr were living. I mean, it's like they were at the Big Bang, and I was out surfing the out on the edges, on the periphery, surfing the shock waves.
Yeah, you got the echoes.
Yeah.
I mean, that whole thing that's mass marketed that you grow up with 10 years later or 5 years later. I found the two individuals were so key in stimulating it.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
And then we're interviewing them at the same time in the synchronicity. And they're two people who don't know each other. They know the same people, but they don't know each other.
Right.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, and they probably saw each other and never knew it.
Yeah, in the room.
Yeah, they probably, bumped into each other, just bumped into, lots of people, and probably came across one another and never knew it, never were introduced.
Yeah, or commented to each other at the bar, at the tape center, or something, just passing remarks.
Sure.
And that was amazing to get the tape center as something that influenced him, and that was the whole thing that got Gerd going. So that was a missing connection.
Mm-hmm.
And then to read this history where they talk about the tape center. So, one reads these histories that I'm quoting, and they mention Robert Carr, had an influence on Wes Wilson, but they don't go into who Robert Carr was in the 50s, what he does in the 70s. We got more stuff coming up. You know what I mean?
What were you reading from there?
I just went on the Internet and Googled Wes Wilson and posters and came up with a website that was giving the history of psychedelic posters.
And Carr's name was mentioned in there?
Yeah, I read it. Remember it said Robert Carr?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were reading from his book at that point or what you were reading from. I wasn't paying attention.
No, it was from the website.
Wow.
And, and then he's saying that he was in a book history. Now, if I had read that history, let's say the book came out 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and I read it, I would have seen Bob Carr's name. I would have thought, oh, yeah, that's probably Worcester's friend. But I wouldn't have known that much about it. And then I might not have interviewed him. I'm glad I know it now. So then when I see these books and histories, I'll see what I've added to it.
Right.
I would not have thought of what I would have added to it 10 years ago. I would have just said, oh, that's Robert Carr. He had something to do with psychopost. It just would have been a passing thought.
Right.
But reading his own book made me realize how much he'd done. And this whole point of them having their little psychedelic acid tests in the late 50s, and we've got Worcester's view of it and Carr's view, that's a precursor to them what happens 8 years later.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty... They were the effects preceding the cause.
Yeah. What happened 10 years later?
Psychedelic stuff, 67, 68, 69.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, my God. That's pretty awesome to think about, actually.
Yeah, think of his mind. He's going around at the Trips Festival in January 66 looking at these people partying on acid, and he has his own thoughts and experience to relate back to 9 years, 6, 7, 8 years before, that he was doing it before.
And he was doing it within the context of a different media matrix. It'd be interesting to know how his experience, if his experience of acid, how it shifted in, when he was doing it in, 10 years later under television satellite conditions.
Now, we'll ask him that.
Yeah.
We have him describing LSD, what it was like in the late 50s. He described that last session. And last week, and then now we'll get him to describe whatever happens when he does acid in the 60s or 70s.
Yeah. He did it, when he was doing it with Hubbard and those guys, it was before acid had been contaminated with all the cultural expectations that had been overlaid.
That's right.
John really used the flotation tank because he wanted to be in an environment which did not program the the experiencer, you know. And then he got into ketamine because no one had worked with it before, and he wanted to be in virgin territory as opposed to using substances against about which memes had already been developed and cultivated. See, by the time I started doing psychedelics, the whole scene had been infiltrated by MK Ultra. I still remember being in high school. My introduction to high school was that they rounded us all and put us in the high school auditorium and played MK Ultra movies about people jumping out of cars on LSD and being restrained in straitjackets and you know, killing their mother and father and stuff like that. That was my introduction to psychedelics. That was the cultural meme that I was given. It was pretty filthy, pretty contaminated at that point. Pretty, you know, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
But you know, as McKenna used to like to say, that acid is it's a solvent. You know, it washes away your cultural preconditioning, and the culture doesn't like that because you don't become a good citizen from the view of the culture. So the culture then, you know, comes back and tries to poison the whole thing.
Right. So, you know, they did LSD before the mixed corporate media of the global theater effect. By the mid-60s, you know, 10 years later, 67, McLuhan was saying LSD was a natural way of probing the global theater and was the only art form to probe it, he said, the only one that's equal to the collective experience that was happening under satellite conditions. So what the LSD party retrieved, it retrieved what Worcester and them were doing before the satellite theater demanded people to have it.
Mm-hmm.
It was Worcester's experience, this little microcosm, that was retrieved on a mass level by the satellite environment. The satellite environment retrieved the private experience of Robert Carr and Hubbard and Worcester.
Mm-hmm.
And so that he's walking around watching what was being retrieved.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about it in personal in terms of spiritual value. He says, people don't go inner. He says, I'd rather do it with smaller groups. And the party was... people were more dispersed externally.
Right.
So he's actually has described just a half an hour ago the McLuhan effect of what.
Yeah. But he still wanted to go inner with a small group. He wanted the social consensus sharing. You know, Lily and McKenna both. McKenna advised that you take it in a dark room and you lie down and you really go inner, and you go inner by yourself. But Carr's still going inner with the intimacy of people that he feels safe with and wants to journey with. You know, he wants to have fellow travelers.
Yeah, but he also recognizes how everybody's alone. He does say that in his book and in the experience that we have on tape. He knows you just go off in your own little world.
Yeah, now, that was interesting about Obama, who was on his 60 Minutes tonight. Two things that came up tonight while you guys were talking. One was that...
you were watching it while we were talking?
No, I was watching it before we were talking.
Okay.
And Obama, number one, was trying to get across, you know, that he's just an ordinary guy, that, you know, all this... magnificence of being at the center of all this attention and all the expectations and all the glory and everything that's heaped on you doesn't mean anything to him. So that was one of the things that came out with you and Carr. We're talking about, I don't remember exactly, I have to go back and re-listen to it, but he was talking about how he wanted to get away from the glamour of being a guru and just sort of become an ordinary guy.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that they asked Obama what, you know, so you've been able to consult the previous presidents, they've come and he says, have they given you any good advice? And he goes, yeah, they've given me some good advice, but they recognize, just like I recognize, that ultimately, you know, this is a lonely job and you have to make these decisions on your own. So there's the thing about being on your own there.
Yeah, well, it sounds like Obama has no clue of what's going on. You know, the meaning of him getting in the White House is here comes everybody, and Sarah Palin running for vice president, is that it's an obsolete institution, so obsolete that any joker can get in there now. And he does not know that he's any joker. He thinks that they're celebrating him. He doesn't know they're celebrating that any joker can get in there. And
he doesn't think they're celebrating him. You're projecting.
No, follow this. He thinks, he objects to them celebrating, making a big deal out of him.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But he misses his mediated TV body, that he is a symbol of any...
Well, he said that with respect to, you know, all the pride that's going on in the black community, you know, that when he stood up to give his acceptance speech and he looked out and he saw, you know, the pride and those kinds of feelings among the black community, he said that he was happy to see that spirit, you know, being ignited in those people, but he didn't want to take responsibility. He didn't want to think that, you know, it had really anything, that it was part of his agenda to do anything like that. His agenda is to become, is to be the president, and not to, you know, lift people's spirits in that way necessarily. But he's glad to see that his effect is that, you know, the effect of him being president is doing that.
Yeah, another great little story you've given me to prove my point. I said that. He doesn't recognize that he's not a black person. He thinks he has to be not a black person and represent the people, and he doesn't understand how the media magnifies his blackness, and there's all that effect, and then he thinks he has his other job, and he doesn't know the real meaning of his thing. It's not a black person in there. Is that anybody gets in there from the third world. And so it's open to all comers.
Bob, I just can't even listen to what you're saying. When I watched the interview with this guy, I recognized that this human being is a heavyweight. This guy is not anybody could do his job, and he's straight, and he's not. But he's not caught up in superficial identity issues that people are typically caught up
in. Now, Scott, you have not learned anything I've talked about. That's where he's mistaken. As McLuhan said, you cannot be a philosopher, king, or a spiritual person in electronic conditions. He has no clue. But because he nostalgically looks like someone who has no phoniness or anything, that is the key to people's projections into his charisma. This is going to cause all kinds of shocking problems. And in 15 years, when he writes his memoirs, you'll see that he'll talk about what I'm warning right now.
But he's not going in there with an ego that has anything to do with creating this stuff. It's being projected on him, but he's going in there to do a job. He has a job to do, and that's what he's focused on.
Hey, Scott, first of all, he doesn't know what his job is. The second thing is that you have not learned anything about what we've talked about for 3 years, because you wouldn't be talking this way. You're still putting your ego, spiritual, wisdom, quote, bullshit into this thing. You think that spirituality and egolessness has a role in this situation. No, it doesn't. It has nothing to do with the image. You're forgetting.
I'm just saying, when I see him being interviewed, I see a really substantial person. I see somebody that not anybody could fill his shoes. There's a giant inside that guy there, and it shows.
Okay, now, Scott, you're looking at an image of the guy, and it's his very qualities that you see in him that resonate with the TV image, and the TV image is magnifying them. And then the next point is that his qualities are nowhere near important to the position. As Bill, the Secret Council 10 guy, said to me, when he thinks of a good president, he thought, well, one of my favorites would have been Truman's dog, Truman's terrier. Now, there would have been a good president. He licks who he likes, and he doesn't lick who he doesn't like.
Well, Bill Clinton was kind of like that.
Yeah, but he wasn't a dog. We need a dog in there.
Oh.
And then see what really happens. And that's what the Yippies ran 40 years ago. They ran a pig for president. But, Scott, you're projecting your own whatever, your user's content, and not looking at the media.
I can't help it. I like the guy. He's unassuming. He's calm. He brings back human scale. He really does. I mean, he's all about his family. You know, that's extremely important to him.
And what's his family do? His family worked for the Chicago Mafia, for Mayor Daley, okay?
Well, I don't know about any of that stuff, so I can't comment on it.
Scott, you don't need to comment. I'm telling you. You have to allow yourself to learn things. Why?
When I say his family, I'm talking about his wife and children.
That's what I'm talking about. His wife works for Mayor Daley. Okay? The toughest mafia guy mayor in history. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that you're projecting your own thing in there. That's what the presidency is for people to project the Lilliputian little experiences. And here we are talking with all these people and me for 3 years, and you haven't gotten square one on how to be detached from your own user as content. It's okay that you identify with them, but that's not what we're doing here at Dobbstown. We're learning how to analyze things and understand what's going on, regardless of our little personal preferences.
Yeah, but you impersonalize the guy and turn him into trivialize. I don't know.
Yes, that's what we got to do, because you want to believe there's a human being in there.
There is. Regardless of all I get to see of his image, his image is generated from the human being that all the attention is being focused on.
No, the human being is subject to how well they resonate with the camera. Either videogenic or not. Bush was not videogenic. That caused a lot of problems for people. They'll probably find
Bush was a fucking bully.
He outraged
every country on the planet. He's the most hated man ever lived.
That's right. In about 25, 30 years, historians will write how he saved humanity in a lot of different cases that humans don't even know about. It's the problem.
Well, I believe that's probably true.
Yeah,
I saw Bush being interviewed after Obama's election, and I was surprised at the level of confidence that he has in himself and what he's done as president. He is not apologetic on any level, and he looks like, and he has an incredible presence. I mean, incredible presence. So I don't,
Yeah, you're bringing in irrelevant experience. The point is that Bush's image did not resonate well with the old TV body. He represented the invisible caveman post-chip body landscape, okay? So when you talk about him being the most unpopular person in the world, it's because his image did not resonate with the TV
body. It goes beyond his image. Fucking goddamn it, Bob. People that he got us into a war in Iraq, and people are fucking being murdered and dying and crippled and burned up.
And you know who got you into that war? You did. And all the people who bought cell phones and used the digital landscape had nothing to do with Bush. Bush was swept up in the effects of these meetings.
He was Mr. Unilateral. It was his decision against everyone else's better judgment to do these things.
He represented a certain core of corporate elites, which you wallow in.
Yeah, oil money.
No, and that's what you need. You got a car. You drove me out in L.A. with oil.
Yeah, that's true.
That is the facts. Not true, it's the facts. It's not true, Scott. It's the facts, which is a figure-ground relationship. And so the point is, you can talk this way with other people, but when we're doing work here and interviewing people, and you're not implementing the ideas we're supposed to be learning here, then that's ridiculous. You know, don't talk to me about your personal opinion of Bush and that. It's irrelevant when we're talking, and I'm not impersonalizing him. I'm talking about the facts, the environments we live in, and what it does to people. Why do you think I'm on there every Wednesday warning people about what we're doing? So, and it's not my personal opinion. I've got personal reactions to Bush and Obama and that, but I don't bring them up. I'm talking technically about what we're dealing with. And that's what's so sick about the 60 Minutes interview. I don't even have to hear it or see it. The guy, the interviewer, does not deal with the issues of the medium they're even in. He doesn't even take the opportunity to educate Barack.
Nobody does.
Okay.
I mean, nobody has a glimmer of an idea that this whole financial crisis is a function of the mammoth growth of the computer environment.
My associates know. The reconvened Secret Council 10, Bill and Warren Buffett know. I know how they talk about it. They use McLuhan. They use my stuff. What I talk about is not my personal point of view. It's what the Secret Council 10...
Buffett is consulting Obama.
After he talks to Bill. He goes to Bill on November 5th, then he goes to Obama. The guy who owns the United States is Bill, okay? He owns the United States.
Yeah.
He is so much wealthier than Buffett, it's ridiculous. And that's the people I work with. And I'm telling you, that all that stuff I said since the late 80s is Secret Council 10 intelligence network knowledge. They were always pissed at McLuhan for revealing it. And I can't even get one person among the people to see that. Well, so what? I'm carrying on and putting it down for the record.
You can't get one person on the Secret Council of 10.
No. The Secret Council of 10 knows this stuff. I can't get one person in the audience like yourself to even get it.
Yeah.
One person in the world can get it.
Well, how does the Secret Council of 10 feel about you going out and blabbing all this stuff
everywhere?
They're
all for it. If you listen to my arguments with John Stadtmiller in February, March, April, I told them that we were showing, the Secret Council of 10 were showing what the problem is when you're in the media, even when you're, quote, powerful as a bureaucratically, the Secret Council of 10, why we have to be in the media. They're all for me being in the media. I'm there putting it down for the record what our sort of level says about this big environment, this post-righty environment we're in.
Well, but then you have to believe that the holiopathic principle really means something, because you're not in the media. Obama is in the media. You're not even a molecule in the media.
I'm in the more vibrant media, the chip body. He is in the old TV landscape.
He built his election on the chip body. He used the chip body to build his election.
Because of abuse value. He will end up being a tragedy, as all human beings who go into the old, obsolete TV landscape to be a White House person end up inevitably experiencing. I'm not into having a tragedy on that level.
The guy who interviewed him tonight said, so, you know, we can expect lots of, you know, I don't remember exactly what he said, we can expect lots of, you know, wonderful speeches from you and stuff along the way. He says, well, of course I'm going to address the American people from time to time, but this isn't about speeches and stuff. He goes, I just want to be straight with the American people about what's going on, and I'll come on periodically to do that.
Yeah, and that'll be a big mistake, because you can't be straight with a distorted environment. See, like someone heard some of the video or something, they said, well, that guy, meaning me, should be on Obama's cabinet. And I said, yeah, that's a proper interpretation of what I'm doing. But the thing is, why would I waste my time with a puny little operation like the White House? It's way better to be on the solar level.
You couldn't get past the guards on the out at the gates. You're too wacky for most people, Bob. Nobody gets you.
Hey, the public image of me, the private person, as I've always done, made a lot of money, consults with these institutions. What I said as Bob Neffert...
You couldn't get through to the president if you wanted to, Bob.
I've been with all the presidents for 40 years, okay? The person you hear on the radio is not the person who walks...
So you're having secret talks with Obama behind the scenes?
Well, you notice he comes to Hawaii a lot. Have you noticed that?
Oh, come on, Bob. Okay.
The thing is, you should be not impressed with that. I mean, that's just a local American.
It's got nothing to do with being impressed. It's how far you will go to stretch your story.
I know you're not going to believe it, so it doesn't matter. But on the record, since I'm being taped all the time, I have it on record.
Yeah.
And the point is, the people I met in Kansas are way more important than Obama. Okay? But
right.
Therefore, it's not hard to meet the Obama people. I mean, that's the point. Everything I say on my radio show is literally the facts. Okay? And the funny thing is...
I mean, you're so secret that the Obama White House doesn't know about you. Probably the NSA doesn't know about you, Bob.
No, they do.
You are so holiopathic and so secret.
No. Listen. You're jumping. You're not listening to what I'm saying. After the Kansas meeting...
Yeah.
Bill read me the transcripts that the NSA had of our conversations. Okay?
Oh.
I'm taped all the time. You're taped. You're monitored in this situation.
Oh.
Okay? So the thing is that the Obama people are well aware of what I do, and his advisors are, and they're well aware of Bill, and that's what Warren Buffett is. Warren Buffett represents me and my team to the Obama administration.
Well, then Obama should be able to escape all this terrible abuse you're talking about.
Well, that's the problem. They don't listen. They don't believe it. He doesn't understand the reality we're telling him, and he thinks it's because he's got a lonely job. Well, no, it ain't lonely if you want to understand something. That's the problem.
What do you mean it's not lonely? We just agreed that even Carr said that basically we're alone.
Oh, that's a spiritual thing. I'm not talking about the astral body. I'm talking about the TV body. And don't think that I agree with Carr in anything he's saying.
I don't, but, you know, we just...
Yeah,
you agreed with me that we're alone a little while ago.
Well, I agree with that as a technical fact for the astral body, but it's not a problem. If you want to go into what's it mean to be alone, that's another conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm never alone. Never been alone.
Right. So by... You mean the in the sense that you always have people to collaborate with?
Yeah, and also I don't have a sense of aloneness with my creator.
Well,
I'm always talking to my equator, my creator.
Hmm.
All right, so Robert Carr has a different view. And I don't even know if Robert Carr means what he says.
Right.
He knows that words, he's always telling us words don't say anything. So he's just replaying old tape recordings and hoping you see through that and then might glimpse the person who's behind that and realize that he's not alone.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, back to Obama. I mean, it's incredible what he said in his interview, but it's exactly the way he's scripted to say to provide, quote, human scale, and he doesn't know that ain't human scale. He's just trying to... See, he's only popular because of the image Bush created. And Bush was not resonant with the TV image, so he created a gap. So they had to put in a counter image.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And poor Obama thinks he has something to do other than that. He doesn't know
Well, Obama is so self-assured, and I've wondered from time to time if it isn't because he was guaranteed the presidency, so he never had to sweat the election anyway.
Yeah, he was guaranteed that, and also... He's poised because he's kind of MK Ultra and hypnotized. You just look at any picture of him; the guy looks out of it. And it's very interesting that the photography shows him being a little out of it, if you can see it. But on TV, people see great poise and power, and he may be aware of that. He may not be. But what's interesting is how people.
I don't see power as much as I see thoughtfulness.
Yeah, well, thoughtfulness can be through resonating with television. Be actually absent-mindedness and not alertness. See, the point is that television magnifies certain aspects of a person, and so everybody's responding to the magnification and projecting it on the chemical body. That's square one. I mean, everybody's on LSD.
You know, I don't know how else to put it other than he expresses my highest ideals beyond what I can express. And so when I see somebody expressing that, I go, whoa, that puts me in touch with my own sense of...
Well, that's your nostalgia. That's where you're spiritually backward. You do not engage yourself and critically in what's going on. You're looking for old references and old nostalgia. And that's not what...
No, he's a synthesis of all of the good stuff that's come before him. He's taken the best of the best and he's synthesized it of everything that's come before. You admitted yourself he's a collage of all the past presidents.
Yeah, but I'm not saying
that means he's pushing the envelope and he's going and he's taking the best of everything that came before and he's synthesizing it.
He's not even aware of it. The thing is, it's not the best of anything. It's just what he resonates with. Martin Luther King, Frederick Douglass, Smokey Robinson, Sidney Poitier, and he'll flip into Muhammad Ali.
And, well, tonight they asked him who he reads, and he said he's been reading Lincoln.
Yeah, now that's fucking irrelevant. I mean, imagine that. I mean, that...
He said Lincoln before he became president. He said he just liked the kind... He liked the way the guy thought and his humility and his principles, not how he acted as president.
Yeah, you see, Obama is the perfect symbol of third world people becoming literate. They totally are hypnotized by literacy, and they worship the old historical classics like Lincoln in the government genre of literature. This is more rearview mirror ridiculousness. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he was told to act like that. He's acting more than Reagan about the role of the White House. saying.
See, the thing I find irritating about your the way that you talk about this stuff.
I'm glad you're finding it irritating. It should be irritating to you because I'm rubbing you where.
Yeah, but
not
Bob, you know, it's not that I disagree with, in principle, some of your higher thoughts.
Not higher thoughts.
Okay, well, it's a larger perspective.
No, it's not the larger. It's the dirty, gritty world we experience. It's the weather.
Yeah, but I don't. You can't. Why do you have to take everything away from everybody else and turn everybody else into a snail who's not worthy to lick your boots?
I don't mean that. That's your own projection. I'm only talking about the weather. I'm not in this conversation. My personal feelings. I'm talking about the weather.
Uh-huh.
That's all. Talking about the weather, and nobody knows how to gauge the new weather. I'm not making him small. I'm just pointing out what it is. His words are not appropriate to the times we're in. They're only appropriate to the Lilliputians who want to live in the United States and think they're living in a country. Now, that's going to get you in trouble.
Yeah, but I don't think anybody could do a better job. Somebody has to fill the role, and you think a dog could do it, but, you know, that's ridiculous.
No, it isn't. That's how puny and irrelevant the White House is as a bureaucracy. You don't have a country anymore. It is bankrupt. It just had a meeting yesterday to organize a world government economy.
Yeah.
Okay? In Washington.
Right.
And they only took them, 3 hours? And they adjourned the meeting, and they had nothing to say to the world. They had nothing to say to the world media, which will cause the market to go down probably on Monday.
Yeah.
Well, that's tomorrow. Let's just go there right now.
And well, the markets aren't open yet.
No, Asia. No, it's already happening in Australia. Let's see. I'm still on Carolyn's computer, so it's not as handy as mine, but just to write it in, go to marketwatch.com. That's usually pretty up to date. You see, the fact you think that this is my opinion is where you're mistaken. It's not my opinion. But because...
Well, it sounds like it's your opinion when you tell people to go to Doug Hennigan's website because he's telling the truth.
I don't say it's the truth. I say go read it. Now, you know, it sounds like, no, listen to this, it sounds like, yes, when the acoustic medium is what you're hearing me from, it will sound like that. That's what the private voice, that's the effect it creates. Now, here's the headlines. Asian markets trade mixed Monday as Tokyo erases early losses while Sydney and other benchmarks weaken on concerns over global growth and profit weakness. President-elect Barack Obama says in a 60 Minutes interview that dealing immediately with the economic crisis trumps even fears about the deficit. Japan slides into a recession. So, Obama tries to soothe Wall Street's nerves. It says, to counter the lack of faith in markets, G20 leaders have agreed on steps to combat weakness. Hedge funds could be regulated. Now, that's incredible. They decided to go along with the regulation of hedge funds, which is exactly what Chris Story and World Report started saying last spring. That's what really got implemented in the March World Bank meeting. And now it's becoming voiced by this new Bretton Woods thing. This is where the United States economy will be modulated by a world structure. So, confirmation of Chris Story. I'll be, hopefully remember to talk about that on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm citing Chris Story because he's the only one who's talking about the level that people aren't being reported on. So you go there to read and get thoughts from it. And
sure.
It's got nothing to do whether I agree with him or not. It's the thing you put in your brain. Why read this crap that I'm looking at right now, marketwatch.com? Look at what Chris Story says.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways,
well, I'll tell you one more. I mean, this is, you know, not...
Now, here's something I'll just... Remember what you're going to say. I've been saying that all of the Bear Stearns, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, and Lehman Brothers were shoes of the real problem, J.P. Morgan, okay?
Yeah, right.
That Rockefeller J.P. Morgan is bankrupt since almost 2 years ago. So we're watching the parts of J.P. Morgan disappear, but nothing going wrong with J.P. Morgan until you see today's headlines. J.P. Morgan may reportedly lay off thousands. See, now it's starting to get to the J.P. Morgan. This is getting to, when you said to me last week, Bob, this is getting serious. Well, yeah. It's now getting to what really fell apart 2 years ago. J.P. Morgan. Fidelity shedding 1,700 workers.
Ooh. Is Fidelity an extension of J.P. Morgan?
Yeah, everything is.
Well, except B of A, right?
Well, B of A is part of it, but they were propped up by Bill for a while.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
That's not necessarily indefinite, but they're doing okay right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's Fidelity is the world's largest mutual fund manager.
Right.
And it's got a problem.
Yeah, well, that's because everybody's bailing out of the market. I had, at work, I had a small amount of money invested in, you know, because I have some money taken out of my paycheck, and I had a small amount of money invested in Fidelity, and I took it all out, put it in a money market. That doesn't help. They can't use, if everybody's doing that around the world, taking their money out of the markets and putting it in cash, or then they can't operate. So
yeah.
That's pretty obvious.
And your point is?
Well, I mean, of course they're having trouble. I mean, people are having a natural reaction to the fear of recession, and they're pulling their monies out of the market, putting it in cash. So these financial institutions are going to be struggling because they don't have capital to work with. Everybody's taking their money out.
And why did this all start? A year. Remember, in October 2007, just a year ago, it was at 14,000. Why did this all evaporate?
Well, I think it's because there was a key program. You repeated it on different ones, but the one that I liked the best or remembered the most was you talked about the virtualization of the dollar from the printing press, and then the Federal Reserve comes in, and then gold goes off, and then the
there's the digital computer. We
yeah,
did
that's
it to
the,
ourselves.
That's the well, we didn't do it to ourselves. All we did was create a technology, and it's having this effect that was
yeah,
unmanageable.
We did it to ourselves. We created new technology. I'm looking at it right now. I'm using it to look at MarketWatch.com. That affected older media. Money
yeah.
was one of the older media.
But we did it to ourselves sounds either spiteful or like we should be guilty or something. And we just do what human beings do, and it's backfiring or it's collapsing or we don't understand what we've done. It's always been true with technology that we don't understand the you know what we're doing until it becomes perilous.
That's right, and that's why, on one level, from cliché to archetype, that phrase is McLuhan talking about the cliché that the medium is a message becomes archetypal when he points it out. He's taking the normal wisdom where we always stumble along and never know what we're doing and made it archetypal, turned it into a science. That's the hidden meaning of from cliché to archetype. He's commenting on his own work.
Yeah. Well, do any of your secret council of 10 people work with the McLuhan principles, or is it just you that...
That's all they work with. I mean, Warren Buffett said to Mary McLuhan years ago that Marsh McLuhan changed his life.
Because he understood business better.
Well, whatever, who knows what he saw in McLuhan's writings. He saw something in them, and...
I know there's that little clip of was on one of the CDs that Thal produced where McLuhan's talking to the guy who's the head of Ford, and the guy who's the head of Ford has no clue as to what McLuhan's talking about.
Right. But that's not intelligence agency. That's a captain of industry, which is not intelligence.
Yeah. Something I was going to say a while back, which I thought was interesting, because we talked about how, you know, Carr was and Worcester were working with the psychedelics before they started getting cultural memes, and then by the 60s the cultural memes, and then the MK Ultra comes in and wipes it, and then psychedelic research becomes illegal. Well, I just saw a program on the news story last night on TV where the idea of using ecstasy in therapy is being promoted as a good thing, and it's obviously they're lifting the constraints off of doing research with psychedelics and beginning to authorize them for therapeutic use. That's a full turn of the circle.
Yeah, and Peggy Hitchcock has been one of the funders of the institutes that are getting that done.
Oh, okay.
And she was the funder of the previous cycle, the Tim Leary cycle.
Hmm.
Says, new headline, Europe shares weaken. Stocks in Europe under pressure from oil sector as oil futures take a hit. In Asia, Japan succumbs to recession. Yesterday, Germany announced and Italy announced they were in a recession.
Right. So if you have all this inside scoop from the Secret Council of Ten, why do you bother to quote predictions by the Willows?
Oh, I just pass it on. I provide content. I mean, you know about them, so I tell you. I don't say
that. You say it, you make it sound like you leave me with the impression that you believe their stupid predictions.
Well, the thing is that, you know, I've told you a million times, what I say is not what I believe.
So what am I talking to? The other day I thought to myself, who is Bob Dobbs? And I thought, no, the better question is, what are you?
That's right. I agree. What am I? I'm an environment. I'm a fucking environment. That's what I am.
You're lawnmowered, man, on steroids.
That's right. That's right. I'm all those images, which is shows you the holopathic effect. You think I'm not having any effect, but look at all those movies that are about me.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, David Lynch. What's Bob Chapwood's name? Rumpelstiltskin. Okay? And we don't see it until the right time.
Oh, yeah. I saw Fringe last night, and there wasn't anything particularly, Bob, that stood out about, except that I'm beginning to realize that this character who plays the Boart, the Walter guy, who looks like you, and he really does look like you. It's kind of freaky.
Oh, I didn't know that. We got to mention that.
Oh, I'll send you the picture again. I sent you a picture of him, and you agreed.
About a month ago.
You agreed that he looked like you.
Yeah, I forgot.
Wears his hair the same way.
I agree. Okay.
It's just that this guy is turning into be so eccentric and. Not eccentric, but well, from one point of view, he's eccentric, but he's in such a different zone than all of the people around him that
he's more like me then.
Yeah, he becomes increasingly more like you.
Okay.
Incomprehensible as to how this guy thinks.
Okay, good. Let's leave it at that. I gotta go, so that's good information. I can use that.
Yeah. So I got the first hour of tonight's talk is up, and I'll get the second part, 30 minutes or whatever, up in the next 20 minutes.
Yeah, pretty soon. You haven't heard the International Connection shows yet.
Well, I heard the couple of the, I don't know if there's a couple new ones what's his name, post any new ones?
Not today's, but we got October 26th, November 2nd, November 9th. November 9th, part 2 is broken, but it's just been fixed. But you've heard the first couple of weeks, right?
Yeah.
And you notice it's totally different. I'm a different person on there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, with what's his name again?
Greg.
Greg Duffel, yeah. No, yeah, I know. I mean, Greg, it's Greg's show, and you're kind of like the guy who's like on Howard Stern. He's got his sidekicks who sort of kick in stuff every now and then in order to spice up the show or whatever.
So I can dominate one show, James' show, and then be a sidekick in another, and that should teach you something.
Yeah, well...
I'm neither. Actually, I'm neither, but I can be different things.
Yeah, I do appreciate that about you, Bob. I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm beginning to realize I should start emphasizing that I am the greatest actor of our time.
No, Obama is.
No.
What you say about him is true.
Yeah, he's a specialist actor. My acting is so comprehensive that it's not even noticed to be acting for, you know, 50 years. So, and it doesn't mean that what I say is fake. It's a new kind of being an actor, because you look at any of the famous actors, they don't know anything. They're just dupes within their own little worlds, and they get in trouble. I offer a way to be an actor that gives you security.
An actor who never gets any traction in the media.
Not immediately, and that's what you don't want to have. As
right.
McLuhan said, success leads to failure. If you get media success, you're screwed. So I've been able to be the greatest actor and still not be noticed in the TV body. And so I'm going to be developing that, just warning you.
Okay.
Bob's the greatest actor of our time.
Yeah.
And all this is to get you to wake up, Scott.
You know, when I probably will finally wake up is when you begin to make predictions that actually happen. Now, you have already a couple times. A couple things that I've been impressed with was when I was with you in June. You said that in reference to the SWIFT, that the banks were not loaning money. That didn't, and you used the word dead cat bounce. Those things didn't come out in the media for another 3 months. Now, I thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But you make a lot of predictions, and a lot of them don't happen. So, we'll see.
I don't know what they were.
Well, you've been saying cold fusion is right around the corner for like 15, 20 years now.
I didn't say it was right around the corner. I said it was coming. It's now that I'm saying it's right around the corner. I never said a year ago or 2 years ago that it was going to be here in 12 months.
Right.
I said it was coming, but I never said 12 months. Now I'm saying it.
Right.
So, yeah, you got me on a big prediction now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how you're going to worm your way out of this one if it doesn't happen.
Oh, we'll see.
We'll see. You'll find a way.
Beg your pardon?
You'll find a way.
Find a way. No way. I'll find the facts. I'll just be reporting the facts.
Right.
Okay.
Mon Squaw's site's down for some reason, but I guess that happens sometimes with PutFile.
Yeah, well, he had problems, and is it down right
yeah,
now?
Yeah, it's down right now.
Yeah, there was problems there in general at PutFile itself for last week. That's why. Anyways, it was up earlier today, but who knows? Okay, I got to go, so we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Okay, very good.
Okay, thanks.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Yeah.